listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Lawyers for WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange rejected Ecuador's offer for the publisher to leave the London embassy under a guarantee that he wouldn't face a death penalty, but leaving open potential criminal prosecution. RT's Polly Boyko has more.
The Ecuadorian president has done a radio interview in which he's been very frank about Julian Assange, and he said that the British government has guaranteed in writing that if Julian Assange is to leave the Ecuadorian embassy in London, well then the UK won't extradite him to a third country where he could face the death penalty. So as a headline, this sounds like jolly good news for Julian Assange. But it's important to remember that the Ecuadorian president isn't exactly Julian Assange's biggest fan. Lenin Moreno has referred to Assange as a hacker in the past. In the interview, he said that he's fed up with the WikiLeaks editor staying in his country's tiny London embassy.
I do not like the presence of Mr. Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy, but we have been respectful of his human rights. With that in mind, we think that 6 years is too long for someone to remain almost incarcerated in an embassy, no matter how good the treatment is that they are receiving. Hosting him costs us $1 million a year.
The big concern that Assange's lawyers have had throughout the 6 years he spent in the Ecuadorian embassy is this prospect of a criminal case against Julian Assange over in the US. In fact, last month it was revealed accidentally that the US Justice Department had filed secret criminal charges against the WikiLeaks editor, and prosecutors have refused to reveal what specifically those criminal charges are. So, however much the Ecuadorian president might want Julian Assange to walk out now that he says he's got these guarantees, it's simply not that easy. On the one hand, yes, whatever case there was against Assange in Sweden has has collapsed and it's expired. But technically, Assange is still wanted by British authorities for skipping bail here in the UK. And with prosecutors in the US unable to even say what the criminal charges against Julian Assange are, I don't think this saga is over yet.
Peter Thatchell is a human rights activist based in London. He gave the following comments about Assange's case to RT over the weekend.
It's certainly true that the British government would not extradite Julian Assange to a third country where he could face the death penalty. And, you know, maybe the US government might at some point give assurances that he won't face the death penalty. But so far, the US government has not given those assurances. And even if they did, that would not preclude him facing charges which could land him in prison for 30 to 50 years. And that is would be a most unjust punishment for a person and an organization that he is part of who simply published information which ought to have been in the public domain from the get-go.
President Donald Trump was at the Project Safe Neighborhoods National Conference in Kansas City, Missouri, Friday, and delivered the following comments.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Appreciate it very much. I want to also thank Matt for the introduction. He's doing an excellent job, really a leader, strong leader. I was also thrilled to announce earlier today that I am nominating, as Matt said, William Barr to take the helm as our new Attorney General. He's an outstanding man. Bill previously led the Justice Department with distinction as Attorney General under George H.W. Bush, following his unanimous confirmation by the United States Senate. During his tenure, he demonstrated an unwavering adherence to the rule of law, which the people in this room like to hear. There's no one more capable or more qualified for this role. He deserves overwhelming bipartisan support. I suspect he'll probably get it. I'm honored to be in Kansas City with the incredible men and women of law enforcement. I've been here a lot over the last couple of months. The U.S. attorneys, state, local prosecutors, police officers, sheriffs, deputies, and federal agents who keep our country safe. You keep America safe. And you maybe don't hear it enough or sometimes don't feel it enough. You do an incredible job. The people in this country know it and they love you. Just remember that. So true. On behalf of a grateful nation, I just want to say that we thank you, we salute you, and we stand with you 100%, all of us, me and all of us. We're here today to restore one of the most effective crime prevention strategies in America, Project Safe Neighborhoods. This initiative brings law enforcement, community groups, and local leaders together to get the most violent criminals in the most dangerous areas off the streets and behind bars. After many years of neglect, we are bringing back this life-saving program stronger than ever before. Today is the first nationwide meeting of Project Safe Neighborhoods in 8 years. And here with us is the man who started this visionary project all the way back in 2001, former Attorney General John Ashcroft. Where is John? Where is John? Great John. I've been here a lot lately, John, huh?
Thank you.
Been here a lot. That's good. Thank you. Thank you for a great job. I also want to thank two members of my administration who are doing tremendous work. The head of ATF, Thomas Brandon, and the acting DEA administrator, Utham Dhillon. Please. Thank you, fellas. We're also joined by a great representative of the state, Congresswoman Vicky Hartzler. Helps me a lot. Thank you, Vicky. Thank you, Vicky. And we are especially excited to have with us the man who is your state's current Attorney General and newly elected United States Senator, that's why I've been here so much lately, Josh Hawley. Josh, thank you, Josh. And I will tell you, Josh really stepped up to the plate. You know, in life, you never know. You pick somebody, looks good, sounds good, think he's smart, and then they choke. They choke like dogs. And you say, what did I do? I picked the wrong person. Well, we saw a lot about Josh, and we thought he'd be great. And I tell you, he had a tough race against a very tough competitor. You know that. And he was absolutely fantastic. So I just want to congratulate you. And, you know, I keep listening to the fake news that they won the House. Nobody ever talks about the Senate. We won the Senate easily. In fact, we picked up two. And that hasn't been done in a long time. For a person as president, you just, for whatever reason, that doesn't happen very often. And we have the Senate now 53-47. And we're very proud of that. But you never hear that. You only hear the House. And the nice part about having the Senate is when you have the Senate, your judges, you know, we've appointed many, many judges. We're just about at a record clip ever. And by the time I finish, we should have the all-time record, except, of course, on a percentage basis. You know who the best of all was, right? George Washington. 100%. He picked 100% of the judges. That's the only one that I won't be beating. I can never beat George. He's tough. 100%. I asked that question. I say, who had the greatest percentage of judge picks? And so far, I haven't had too many people guess it. But as soon as I say this, I can't believe I didn't think of that. Finally, we are grateful to the U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Missouri, Timothy Garrison. Where's Timothy? Timothy. Thank you, Timothy. Great job, Tim. Along with a very well-known person, Kansas City Police Chief Rick Smith, for hosting today's event. Thank you very much, fellas. Thank you, Rick. Thank you. Everyone here today is committed to the same vital goal, liberating our communities from crime and securing the right of all citizens to live in safety and to live in peace. In the 2 years before I took office, the violent crime rate increased by 7%, and murders were up by over 20%. But we're turning it around very quickly, much quicker than anyone thought possible. At the core of our strategy is restoring respect for law enforcement. And there's nobody that deserves respect more than you people, that I can tell you. For too long, many politicians and radical activists have been smearing and slandering our police, making life easier for criminals and harder for law-abiding Americans. We will not tolerate attacks on the heroes who protect our streets and defend our communities. We will not allow it to happen. My administration has also made officer safety a top priority. We will protect those who protect us, and we will believe the right punishment, and we all do, for cop killers is called the death penalty. And you know, in some circles, that's very controversial to say that. You have all of the television cameras rolling back there. For me, it's not even a little bit controversial. You kill a cop, and it's called the death penalty, okay? At the same time, we are ensuring you have the resources you need to do your jobs properly. We have added nearly 200 new violent crime prosecutors across the country. We have made more than $600 million worth of surplus military equipment available to law enforcement that, as you know, the previous administration would not allow you to have. It was sitting in storage houses and warehouses all over the country, getting old and gaining dust, beautiful stuff, and they didn't like it because it made you look too strong. And I liked it because it made you safe. And now it's been distributed all over the country to the police, and you're using it very well and very judiciously, and we appreciate it. We increased funding for Project Safe Neighborhoods to $50 million this year, and we're asking Congress to add an additional increase for next year that will happen. We secured $6 billion in new funding to combat opioids, the most in history. And speaking of that, Kellyanne Conway is here, a very special person. Where is Kellyanne? Is she around here someplace? Stand up, Kellyanne. She's worked so hard with Melania, the First Lady, and they're working very hard. And thank you, Kellyanne. Great job. We've increased the average sentence for drug trafficking to its highest level since 2013. I signed landmark anti-drug legislation that included the STOP Act to help prevent fentanyl from entering our country through the mail service. And at my recent meeting that you all read about 3 days ago with President Xi of China, this took place in Argentina at the G20, President Xi agreed to criminalize and make all fentanyl in China controlled, meaning it's a controlled substance, such a big event. And it was really considered an industrial agent. It was not criminal at all. He's agreed to make it a controlled substance and the highest criminality. And that would bring into play, again, the words death penalty, from no penalty to death penalty. And that's the way our meeting went. And I appreciate President Xi doing that very much, because we lose about 80,000 people a year to fentanyl. So now they can send it, but they get caught, they're going to get the death penalty. I have a feeling you're going to see it go down very rapidly. Very, very rapidly. It's a terrible thing. This year, thanks to the efforts of everyone in this room, I'm proud to report a new all-time record for the prosecution of violent crime. You also prosecuted 15,300 defendants for federal gun crimes, almost 20% more than the previous record. In partnership with the federal government, local law enforcement is also making tremendous historic strides. Here today is Wilmington Police Chief Bob Tracy. Where's Bob? Hi, Bob. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. When a vicious gang member shot and killed two people in Wilmington last February, investigators used the ATF's ballistic database to match the shell casings to another shooting and bring the killer to justice. Amazing job. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. Over the past year, shootings in Wilmington are down nearly 60%, and firearm murders are down over 35%. Thank you, Chief Tracy, for your unbelievable work. We're reading about it, we're seeing it, and it really is exceptional. Thank you very much. Thank you. An important milestone in our campaign to make America safe again is the reduction in the murder rate. Murders in America's largest cities are projected to drop by more than 8% compared to 2016, a remarkable turnaround in just two short years. And you are the ones who have really made it possible. We've given you certain advantages that you didn't have before this administration, but you have made it possible. With us today is U.S. Attorney Maria Chepa Lopez. Maria, where's Maria? Thank you, Maria. Great. Maria assembled a team from the IRS, the FBI, and Tampa police to take down a violent street gang in Tampa, Florida. Thanks to this collaborative effort, 11 gang members are now facing hard time in prison. Maria, great job. We've all been reading about it. Very, very exceptional. Thank you. Thank you very much. James Clark with the Better Family Life Initiative is here as well. James, thank you very much, James. James works with schools, churches, family members, and friends to de-escalate conflicts and stop violence before it happens, a very dangerous thing he does. But he's not afraid. You're not afraid, are you, James? It's just a day in the office, right? Stand up again, James. That's pretty... That's not easy. That's not easy. And James and his team have successfully ended more than 50 ongoing escalating gun battles between rival gangs right here in St. Louis. James, great job. It's really incredible what you do. And everybody in this room appreciates it. Thank you very much. And all over the country, they appreciate it, James. As part of our comprehensive crime reduction strategy, we are reforming the prison system to help more former inmates get on the right track. We all benefit when those who have served their time can find a job, support their families, and stay the hell out of jail, right? That's what we want. Stay out of jail. That's why I have called on Congress to pass the First Step Act so that more inmates gain the skills they need to become productive, law-abiding citizens. And we've helped them a lot by creating one of the greatest economies, maybe the best economy this country's ever had. Our jobless rate is now down to 3.7%. And by the way, in Missouri, I was just told by Josh, it's at 3.2%, which is the lowest in the history of the state. So now when people get out of prison, rather than not being able to find a job, some employers, frankly, are forced to hire people that maybe they wouldn't normally do. And the reports coming back are incredible. I have one particular person that says it's hired seven people, and he just is thrilled. He can't even believe it. We're giving them a chance. And the economy is maybe it's a beneficiary, but it's also one of the reasons that it's working so well. So we're very proud. It's a lot of good reasons to have an economy that's so good, but that's maybe toward the top of the list as far as I'm concerned. We know it's possible for former prisoners to turn their lives around because their safe neighborhood partners really make it happen every single day. Deborah Daniels is the co-founder of Offender Alumni Association in the great state of Georgia. Hi, Deborah. Through peer-to-peer networking, coaching, and support, Deborah and her team have helped more than 650 former offenders start new lives as law-abiding members of society. It's an incredible story. I've read the story. I've seen it. Many of you have seen it. Thank you, Deborah, for giving these Americans a true second chance, and in some cases, you could say a third chance at a good life. Thank you, Deborah, very much. Thank you. The amazing results of Project Safe Neighborhoods prove just how critical it is to foster cooperation among law enforcement at every single level of government. Nowhere is this cooperation more important than when it comes to enforcing our nation's immigration laws. You've been reading a lot about immigration, haven't you, folks? But we're getting it. We're really getting it. We're being strong on the border. We could use a little help. But we're being strong on the border. A lot of brave people working with us on the border. Every day, our brave ICE officers are working with the state and local partners to get some of the world's most violent criminals off our streets, and we get them the hell out of our country. We get them out. Since I took office, ICE agents have arrested over 235,000 aliens with criminal records. Think of that, 235,000. And then you have a lot on the Democrat side. They're saying, we don't want to respect ICE. We want to get rid of ICE. We're not getting rid of ICE. They're going to be with us. They're heroes. They're heroes. Think of that, though, 235,000. And that includes those charged and convicted of more than 100,000 assaults and over 4,000 murders. Last year alone, ICE and Border Patrol seized more than 2.8 million pounds of illicit narcotics, and we have quadrupled the seizures of fentanyl. And now with our new deal with President Xi of China, maybe we won't even have to worry about that so much. I think you're going to see that coming down at numbers that are pretty unbelievable. Removing these deadly poisons and vicious predators from our neighborhoods depends upon partnerships with local communities and their elected leaders and officials. Unfortunately, there are extreme politicians in cities and states around America, I'm sure you haven't heard about this, who have issued policies to forbid their police departments from working with federal immigration authorities. Hard to believe, isn't it? These outrageous sanctuary cities are grave threats to public safety and national security. Each year, sanctuary cities release thousands of known criminal aliens from their custody and right back into the community. So they put them in and they have them and they let them go and drives you people a little bit crazy, doesn't it, huh? But it's changing. It's all changing. You look at what's going on in California. Many people are demanding that they not be a part of a sanctuary city. They don't want sanctuary cities. It's happening by its own. American politicians should protect American citizens, not criminal aliens. Not one more American life should be stolen because of radical politicians pursuing their open borders agenda. Nearly 100% of the heroin in our country comes across the southern border, killing 300 Americans at least a week. A week. According to the Council of Economic Advisors, this illegal heroin costs our country $238 billion in 2016 alone. Think of that. And we're talking about a wall for $20 billion, $15 billion. I could even do it cheaper. I have to. And it'll be better than anybody's ever seen a wall. Think of that. You're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars, and you're talking about a fraction. You'd make it up in a month by having a proper wall. You see what's happening. You see where they're surging. And our great people are able to easily handle it. Without the wall, it gets tougher. But you know what? They still handle it. Illegal immigration is a threat to the well-being of every American community, threatening innocent families, overwhelming public resources, and draining the federal treasury. Congress must fully fund border security in the year-ending funding bill. We have to get this done. They're playing games. They're playing political games. I actually think the politics of what they're doing is very bad for them, but we're going to very soon find out. Maybe I'm not right. But usually I'm right. Like I said, I'm going to win for president. And some people said, that won't happen. And guess what? Look who's up here now, folks. But this includes fully funding our great ICE officers, ICE attorneys, border agents, detention beds, equipment, technology, and life-saving border wall, which we need more than ever. We need it more than ever. When you see these caravans of thousands and thousands of people, they like to minimize it on the fake news, but you know, you have tremendous amounts of people coming up, and it's incredible. And oftentimes, they'll keep the cameras low. I know every trick. They've taught me. I know every trick. They'll put women and children in the front row. And they'll have those cameras nice and low. So number one, it doesn't look like a big crowd. Number two, all you see is women and children. And they say, you're such bad people. I'm such a bad person. But behind that front couple of rows, you got some tough, tough people. You saw the mayor of Tijuana. He said, these are tough people. You talk to them and we end up in fights. These are tough people. We don't want them coming into our country. We want great people coming in. Some of them would be great people. We need people because we have so many companies coming into our country. Car companies are pouring in. They're all coming in. A big announcement by Fiat Chrysler the other day. They're going to move into Michigan with a massive new plant. A lot of things are happening. We need people at 3.7% unemployment. But they have to be brought in the legal way, and they have to be, we talk merit. We want to bring them in through merit. We want people that can love our country and people that can help our country. It's all very simple. To me, it's very simple. Every American citizen is entitled to a safe community and a secure border. Here in the audience today are three trailblazing leaders, they truly are, who are working to dismantle MS-13 over the past 2 years. They've helped so much. They've done such an incredible job. 29 MS-13 members have been charged and convicted just recently, despite being targeted for retaliation. These three patriots are U.S. Attorney Zach Terwilliger. Where's Zach? Tell us, Zach. Heard great things about you. Herndon Police Sergeant Claudio Shaha. Thank you, Claudio. Thank you very much. And Fairfax County Police Detective Ray Betts. Thank you. Thank you. All three, thank you very much. As president, nothing is more important than protecting the security of our nation and its citizens. So to every federal law enforcement officer who is on the front lines of that mission, to the U.S. Marshals, ATF agents, immigration officers, FBI, DEA, and all state and local authorities who proudly wear this incredible uniform. It's really the uniform of our country. I say, keep up the great work. You know that my administration will always have your back. We will never, ever let you down. In the most hazardous moments, in the high-speed chases and the high-stakes courtrooms, in darkened alleys and late-night stakeouts, you are always there and always keeping watch over us. Our people love you. They love you. You don't hear it, but they love you. You never let us down, and we will never let you down. You bring criminals to justice and peace to our streets. You are the reason Americans sleep soundly in their beds at night, and you are the ones making America stronger and prouder and safer and greater than ever before. We are making America greater than ever before. We are respected again as a nation. We love our law enforcement. I just want to thank you all for being here. It's my great honor to be before you, and God bless the United States of America. God bless you all. Thank you very much. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The yellow vests shake France to her core. Is it time for Macron to go? Speaking of time to go, with the Brexit vote looming, is Theresa May's time up too? Also, Mike Pompeo wants to remake the world. Cross-talking some real news, I'm joined by my guest here in Moscow, Mark Sloboda. He's an international affairs and security analyst. We also have Dmitry Bobich. He's a political analyst with Sputnik International. And we have Glenn Deason. He is a professor at the Higher School of Economics, as well as author of The Decay of Western Civilization and Resurgence of Russia. All right, gentlemen, cross-talk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. I want to talk about the yellow vests first. They've had their fourth weekend in the spotlight here. I want to go to Paris right now. I want to go to Xavier Moreau. He is the founder of the Center of Political Strategic Analysis, StratPol. Xavier, welcome. Thank you for being with us. Okay, after four weekends of this in the spotlight, we haven't seen much of the French president or heard much. How has this group of protests or riots, however you want to describe it, changed France over the last month or so?
You know, actually, the last round, as we call this this protest in France, is very important because last week Emmanuel Macron gave up on all taxes he promised to the French citizen. But now the people still continue to protest because they want Macron to leave. And it's a very big problem for Macron of legitimacy. Because since the beginning, he was since the French election, actually, he has a big lack of legitimacy because he came through a coup, a judicial and media coup. And during the last 18 months, he was unable to create the legitimacy he didn't have on the beginning of his presidency. And because many scandals, he insulted the French people when he was outside the country. He said that, for instance, there is no French culture. And and actually, he promised reforms. But what is the only thing he did was increasing taxes. So he's no more, he's not legitimate, but actually, he wasn't legitimate at all since the beginning.
All right, stay with us here. Glenn, I mean, the office of the French presidency is very powerful. It was made that way intentionally. As Xavier had to say, it's a question of legitimacy, a crisis of legitimacy. Where do we go from here?
It's a good question. I think for Macron, like he was, he entered very late in this, as a, more or less, almost as an independent into this election.
So he was anointed by the media and the power.
And I agree with what is said on that point, because he was very much this very charismatic investment banker who the media hailed as this, you know, defender of Europe. And essentially Europe was in, well, believed it needed a defender because we had the rise of populists. So when Macron was able to win, it was essentially recognized as he was the bulwark against the populists. But again, the problems from the global financial crisis was never solved. And as we see now, I think it's at best was able to temporarily delay what had to happen, which is an upset in the French political system, as well as people do want real changes. So,
well, you know, what was interesting here, Mark, is that it wasn't political parties that were pushing this forward. It wasn't trade unions. It wasn't institutions. It was the lack of functioning institutions that have brought people out into the street, and high prices, of course.
Well, the lack of functioning institutions and Macron's neoliberal globalist policies. Macron's approval rating has fallen from some 55% down to 18%, while polls also show that 68 to 72% of the French people support the protests that the media is trying to decrame as violent and mobs and so on. When we see clearly that it is unions and firemen and students out there protesting.
And it's not just in Paris, it's all across the country.
All across the country. And they're not just protesting the fuel taxes and Macron personally, but they're also protesting very specific other things in his policy, like his removal of the wealth tax. With one hand, he hands an extra fuel tax to the working class, right, and the poor. While the other hand, he removes taxes from the ultra wealthy and corporations.
So what you're saying is that if you're for saving the environment, let the working class pay for it.
Well, absolutely. He was called the president of the rich. In one of his speeches last year, he made a scandalous remark. He said that at the train stations are wonderful places because there you could meet the people who succeed and the people who are nothing. So obviously the people who succeed are the people like him. And the people who are nothing,
Marie Antoinette all over again here.
Instead of let them eat cake, if they don't want to pay my fuel taxes, let them buy expensive electric cars.
This is exactly what the European press is writing about Macron, you know, that his worst mistake would be to behave like Marie Antoinette. Even though Marie Antoinette never actually said this phrase, it was ascribed to her. This is what historians...
Okay, let me go back to Xavier. Xavier, maybe it's too early to say here, and we don't want to jump the gun, but I mean, if there is a crisis of legitimacy with the president of France, where do we go from here? I mean, if he won't have the moral authority, he has the legal authority, let's not deny that. But if he doesn't have the moral authority, would he be doing the country a favor by leaving?
That's the point. The Fifth Republic is a very strong institution, a strong constitution for the president. So actually, even if he's not popular, he can stay till the end, as did François Hollande. But the problem is now he won't be able to take any decision, because you have to understand that people going on the street on Saturday, they work all the rest of the week. So it's working people ready to, they have no more money even to go to the cinema. So they have time to come each Saturday on the Champs-Élysées and to block the country. And as you say, not only in Paris, but in all the big city. And what something very important happened yesterday, that Emmanuel Macron, actually the Minister of Interior, he sent main of the French police troops to Paris. But the rest of the country was free. So the unrest were very strong, and stronger than it used to be the last 3 weeks in Bordeaux, in Lyon, in smaller cities. But actually, the security system, French system, is overloaded. Yeah. And actually, Macron can't no more govern the country. Maybe he will propose on Tuesday to change the prime minister, but it won't change anything because people don't want Macron anymore.
You know, Mark, you started out by saying this is a protest against neoliberalism, and we've seen
that's
this.
That's part of it.
Right. It's part of it. Part, oh, no, it's a bread and butter issue too. Yeah. I mean, I don't deny that, obviously, here. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the French elites should have seen something like this coming here. I mean, it's affecting all of Europe here. We'll talk about Brexit in a couple of minutes here. But this is, it's not just a protest against Macron, even against the French elites. It's a protest against ideology, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, and we are, I think, on the record as having, you know, predicted this divide, because it's not just the protesters on the far right that are protesting, it's the protesters on the far left. This is the Le Pen Mélenchon 41% of the country during the first, you know, round of the French vote. We're still playing out the aftermath of this French election here, and moving forward, the people having voted for another neoliberal central globist to stop Le Pen, but, you know, they've seen the same failed policies from Sarkozy, from Hollande, center-right, center-left, right, fail again and again, and we're going to see this play out into the next election, and it is more than just a French issue, right? So we've talked about this right, left in France. It's not just in France. These yellow vest protests have spread. They're in Belgium. They're the Netherlands. There was an attempt to storm the EU Parliament in Brussels last, over the weekend. So, you know, what we've seen is still going to play out over the days and the months ahead. Even if Macron's 89,000 stormtroopers called into the street managed to beat back and repress the French people with batons and tear gas
It won't stop it.
Yeah, but I also think it's been fueled a little bit by him walking this back. Again, it's obviously this fuel tax was a mistake to begin with, but by suspending it, I think that for the people who were just marching the street for very limited goals, they might, you know, go back to their houses. But for the people who have broader goals, like unseating him and
the appetite comes with the eating.
Yeah, pushing for huge reforms in France. For them, I think they recognize that they can actually make real change if they continue this forward. So it might intensify conflicts. I mean, if anything, if something like this was happening, for example, in Russia, I think that by now the Americans and Germans would be handing out cookies and, you know, calling for regime change.
Where's Victoria Nuland, you know, or maybe Assad should be arming the moderate rebels.
Okay. Moderate rebels.
You know, we've had this going on in France. We're going to talk about Brexit next. Okay, when are the European elites going to wake up that their vision for the world isn't working for the majority of the people?
Well, you are absolutely right, because it's not the first protest, actually. There were electoral protests, when people just didn't vote for the referendum suggested by the EU. The EU failed in France, in Holland, in other places. And now, look, the ultra-liberals, the globalists, they have lost all their charismatic leaders. Hillary Clinton
lost.
I want
you to hold on that because we're talking about the second half here. Xavier, last 30 seconds go to you in this block here. Are you optimistic that the yellow vests are a permanent fixture in political life in France?
Actually, that's the point, that there is no political party that can be pretend to be the leader of the Yellow West.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing. And that's probably a good thing.
Yes, actually, because as soon as he will be a leader, he will be corrupted or arrested.
Exactly.
So we need to continue like that, you know, a fully autonomous movement. And we have a clear will. It's Macron must get out the president function.
Okay. Hashtag Macron must go.
Okay, Macron must go. Yes. We'll leave it on that point. Xavier, thank you very much for joining us here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, Dima, we just finished discussing the yellow vests. Where do we go from here?
I think we go to Germany,
okay,
where Angela Merkel had to cede her position of the leader of the Christian Democratic Union, which still calls itself a center-right party. I don't know what we should call it now.
You know, Dima, you know, I've known you for a very long time, and one of the most recurring topics you and I have talked about over the years is redefining our political language. And I think we're at a juncture where we can start
absolutely
doing that.
Absolutely. Well, as we established during our previous segment, look, the ultra-liberals are losing everywhere. Hillary Clinton lost in the United States. Merkel is leaving in Germany. It's clear that she will stop to be a chancellor maybe even earlier than 2021. Theresa May is clinging to power, but she may be removed in the near future in the UK.
We're going to talk about her next.
And what is interesting is that, you know, talking about the yellow vests and all of these anti-establishment movements in Europe, even the New York Times for the first time had to recognize that Russia had no role in what happened in France. And here is what they wrote. This movement of yellow vests is not focusing on race or migration, and those issues don't appear on yellow list of complaints. It's not led by a single Fire Brethren leader. Nationalism is not on the agenda. End of quote. So the author of the article is at a loss. Usually, when something happened in Europe, they said it was crazy nationalists, populists,
the New York
Russians.
Times at a loss? Really?
Dima, didn't you read Max Boot in the Washington Post? He clearly says that this is not the French people reacting out of anger to policies. This is Russian trolls on Facebook.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. Max Boot said it, then you know it's wrong.
According to BuzzFeed, it's Facebook itself that has caused this.
According to the London Times, Russian Facebook is fueling French protests. This is the headline that I saw.
Oh, so it's Russia and Facebook.
Okay, exactly.
So, Glenn, you know, this is a recurring theme on this program. Never look into the mirror and see your own mistakes. No, it must be social media. It must be trolls.
Russia.
It must be Russia.
Yes.
You know, there is no
the populists.
There's no introspection here. This is one of the reasons this continues to happen.
Well, it's because it's not a minor issue which can be solved within our current political system, because the entire political system we had since the Cold War has very much been this very neoliberal format for globalism. So I think the idea that it can be solved within the current elites, it doesn't necessarily exist. And that's also why this media are having these problems. How do you define it? Is this Putin again, you know, controlling the world?
Or is
it the rise of, you know, all these racists coming out of the forest? Or, you know, it's very hard. Is it, you know, Facebook? So you have all these different ways trying to explain it. But at the end of the day, it's really a rot at the heart of the system.
As I will quote Dima Babich, it's the ideology.
Absolutely. Because look, I mean, this is what they say, you know, Macron should not be so arrogant. Well, even if he wasn't arrogant, this would happen because this is kind of ingrained in the system. Who is going to be the leader of Macron's movement en marche now? The Minister of the Interior, who is now the most unpopular person in the country. Monsieur Castaner is going to be the head of his party. You know, and let me just repeat what I will explain what Xavier said to us when he said that Macron won the election dishonestly. Actually, what happened was that Macron had 24% 5% of the vote in the first round, only thanks to massive media support. The media started a campaign against François Fillon, who had the biggest chance of winning, but who was considered a Russophile because of his friendship with President Putin. It was like a crime, you know, according to the French media.
Of course, it's a crime now everywhere in the Western world.
And the protest vote was divided between three candidates. So the protest vote was actually bigger than the vote for Macron. It was 40%. And now what do I see? The French sociologist, IFOP, they say that 41% of the French, the same 40%, who were ready to vote for, you know, to make a protest vote in 2017, they are ready to see the representatives of Yellow Vests in the European Parliament, and 13% of them are saying they're going to support the list of the Yellow Vests.
Okay. Speaking of leaders and political terminology,
I hope we're going to Brexit.
We're getting there. It was a year ago, 2 years ago, that the Western media proclaimed Angela Merkel, the leader of the free world. Well, that went out of fashion a few months ago.
And then Time Magazine gave it to Macron.
Time Magazine's cover, Macron is the leader of Europe. Politico promoted him. Macron is the leader of the free world. The free world just ain't what it used to be.
Well, Mark, let's go back to that cover. Let's go back to the cover of Time Magazine, leader of the free world. But the subtitle was, but can he lead France? Interesting here. Brexit. I want to go to Brexit, and I want to go to Pompeo. It looks like a lot of people are leaving. Okay, Merkel's gone. Macron's fate is unclear right now. And Theresa May is going to probably have a very bad day on Tuesday.
Assad's curse is still claiming heads?
Yes.
Yes, well, they're all leaving, but it's unclear who's going to follow them. And I don't think they're going to be followed by anyone very different unless...
Because the ideology in the system won't allow a difference.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out on the ideology because, again, the whole purpose, well, the whole problem of the neoliberal movement is that it doesn't have any more conservative constraints on it. If you look at, you know, economic conservatism and political conservatism before the 90s, you had the idea that, you know, national identities should be preserved. You needed some constraint on the economy.
Family values.
Like these are essentially naughty words today. These are dangerous rhetoric. So I think as long as the new leadership, well, not the new leadership, the current leadership in Europe and the United States continue to neglect essentially this balance we had in the past between liberalism and conservatism, you're going to have more of these problems.
Well, Mike Pompeo, Mark. Pax Americana. Pompeo tells UN, WTO, ICC to bow and comply with U.S.-led world order. That's an article from RT here. You know, people have been saying, you know, they're lamenting the passage of the liberal order. Well, it was never very liberal, it was never very peaceful, and it was prosperous for a small number of people here. And now Pompeo wants a remake. What's that remake?
Yeah, Pompeo said that America intends to lead now and always. And that's, I think we can clearly see that that is a promise and a threat. Net. Right? Now, he's speaking at the German Marshall Fund, which is one of the most pro American-led Western hegemony organizations in Europe, right? And even they were a little taken aback by this,
very
right?
Polite, very clapping, polite. I noticed at the end.
When even, he doesn't like, we want to get rid of the UN, we want to get rid of the International Criminal Court, that's no good for America, we want to get rid of the IMF and the World Bank, right? I mean, I don't personally have a problem with that particular part of it, but the people in the EU may have. The EU, that's no good, it doesn't serve America.
It's useless, right.
The African Union, if you in Africa think you know your interests best, you are wrong, because America knows your interests better than the African Union.
You know, Glenn, but this seems to me this is getting down to almost chaos theory. Because, I mean, we built these institutions for better or worse than they have evolved through time. But it was basically to give all states, nation states, some kind of footing here. Mike Pompeo is just tearing that all apart.
But that's what he recognizes as being the weakness. If you read his
weakness for whom?
Well, what he sees for the whole world, according to his view. So if you read his whole speech, the main takeaway would be his argument that multilateralism is not necessarily a good thing. And the argument effectively is
because that's a barrier to hegemony.
It restricts the United States.
Yes. So the idea is that liberal democracies, the freedom-loving countries, they should not be constrained or by giving a voice to the rest of the world. So this is very much the concept of liberal hegemony.
Yeah, but that's saying that only the United States has sovereignty and no one else has sovereignty.
Oh, indeed. And this is kind of the liberal version of George Orwell's Animal Farm, in which, all states are equal, but some states are more equal than others. But I would just point out this is not a new thing, though. Like, after the Cold War, this is essentially how Europe was set up. The whole idea that we shouldn't have a common European home, but rather have Europe led by the EU and NATO was the idea that liberal democracy should run it. They should not be constrained by others, like multilateralism needs limits. And this very much reads like the proposal in the 2000s for a concert of democracies. Essentially, similar logic. We should...
John McCain's still haunting us.
Well, he loved it. But essentially, the idea was put aside international institutions. Like the concert of democracy should not be constrained by the rest of the world. We should have our own rules. We should not share platforms.
But he's not even talking a concert of democracies, because the EU needs to go too, right, when it doesn't serve the U.S. interests. He not only took specific shots at it, but he also defended the idea of the nation state. And you could almost see them choking back as he said that, because the EU, of course, is a nation deconstructing machine, right? It's a supranational state.
We get yellow vests. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go to Deepa.
Well, it's interesting. Whom does Pompeo consider the bad guys, the ones who prevent the Brave New World from coming?
Other than us.
Bad actors. He calls them bad actors. And when he said bad actors, I thought about Macron, I thought about Theresa May.
Of course he did.
I already know why the ultra-liberals are going to blame the next German leader for being ineffective. She has a very bad name. Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer.
Well, I was hoping you would say it.
Okay. I already know. They accuse Hillary Clinton of not being the good candidate.
But she's Merkel 2.0, right?
Yeah. She's an absolute copy of Merkel. Very anti-Russian, very manipulative. I mean, like, what Merkel did, she sucked in some of the ideas of the Social Democratic Party of the centrist left, mostly the so-called identity politics. So she sucked them into her party. And in this way, she destroyed the political landscape of Germany. And Kramp-Karrenbauer is doing the same now.
Who's going to lead Europe? It doesn't need a leader. We don't have Merkel.
United States.
Pompeo provides
your answer. Basically, ideology can lead without a leader. There was a short period in the history of the Soviet Union.
But the results.
The results are very bad.
Last word, Mike.
The Germans and the rest of the European leaders, what they're most shocked of is the honesty and tone of the Trump administration, not any huge change in policy. What they lack, what they've always had, is the illusion that they have sovereignty, that they're not just client states of the U.S. Trump rips that mask off and lays it bare and says, we lead and you get
Trump's
in line.
Trump's wet towel for everyone. That's all the time we have here. Many thanks to my guests here in Moscow. This is the end of our broadcast segment. Stay with us for the extended version on our YouTube channel. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.